You ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Show. Today I speak with Ron Stefanski, who blogs over at the1hourprofessor.com. Now Ron's been building sites for many years now, and in the show he shares some of the insights in how he goes about building a successful content site. We also talk about how he goes about selecting niches and ascertaining whether they're going to be profitable before embarking on a new site. We also talk about how he structures his sites and the link building strategies he favours. Ron also shares some really interesting tips on how he uses Facebook groups to grow the revenue of his content sites. But most painful of all, we talk about how he lost $233,000 on the sale of his biggest site just a few weeks ago. I hope you enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Okay. Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today I have Ron Stefanski on the show. Ron is a veteran builder of content sites and blogs over at onehourprofessor.com. Ron is super transparent with his strategies on his blog and shares his income reports. I've been following Ron for a little while now, and so it's really good to have you on the show, Ron.
Yeah, Mark. No, I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. Before we start, I was just telling you this before. I got to tell people the background because I know people are like, "What is going on?" So I had issues this morning, tech issues, and I've relocated in my wife's office. She is also a YouTuber. So that's what's going on with the background. That's why you're seeing this little llama and some other things. So I had to say it. But yeah, thanks for having me.
That's your story, right? And you're sticking to it.
Yeah.
Cool. So, it's great to have you on the show. Like, I've been following your blog for a while now, and of course, you're known online as the 1 Hour Professor. It'd be great for you to kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background before we kind of get into the meat of the show.
Yeah, for sure. So for those that don't know me, 1hourprofessor.com is my home base, if you will, but that's definitely not my only site. Prior to getting into the world of online business, if you will, I was in sales for 6 years, and then I did digital marketing at a corporate level for about 7 years. And in that time, I also became, and this is one of the reasons why I have that domain name, is I became an adjunct professor at a few different colleges teaching internet marketing. At this point, it's been about 7 years ago or so, I decided to really push hard on the idea of creating online businesses. And essentially I started and had a whole bunch of failures. And then probably at about year six-ish, about 1 year in, I actually found some real success with one site. And then I started to build it out, and it got pretty big. And then I was like, oh, I should rinse and repeat. So then I did it with another site and another site and another site. So now I have a portfolio, and I know we'll get into this, but I've sold a few off as of late. But now I have a portfolio, I believe it's six sites. It's either six or seven. I'd actually have to look. But for those wondering, how could you lose track of sites? It's because I I'm a big proponent of outsourcing, and I am actively myself working on like maybe two at a time, but I have a team that kind of handles it. And some of them are just sitting, and they've been sitting for months and just making passive income as well. So.
Awesome. Awesome. So, I mean, so in terms of those sites, I mean, I guess it was a while ago now, right? Those bunch of sites that you started, like that didn't quite work. I mean, obviously there's probably some learnings there, but like, you know, can you look back and reflect on kind of why some of those initial ones didn't work?
Yeah, I think, so I originally, like, I got the one site to work pretty well, right? And it was working pretty well. And I was just like, well, this is easy. I can go and do this a million different times, right? And then I used some of the revenue from that particular site to kind of bankroll these other sites. So the truth is with a website, it's really easy to start. And all these, I mean, I probably have like two sites that make under $25 a month, but the other sites make a couple thousand dollars a month each, right? They're not like complete failures, but they're also not runaway successes. And looking back, I think that one of the reasons for that really is because I honestly didn't stick with them for various reasons. Like one is really focused on, and the whole model was really focused on Amazon affiliate was like the big thing. And while that still is working for sure with a lot of people, I'm one of those people that I'm hesitant anymore to really, you know, marry into something with Amazon just because I don't trust them based on what they've done to the commissions over time. So to me, that site has done really well and it grew to a certain point. And then I saw what Amazon was doing with commissions and it was like, you know what? I don't know if I should really keep spending my time here because I could try to build this up. And then one day they may come down with the hammer, right? So like that was one that I kind of abandoned, but that still makes me, I think last month, because I don't think you said this yet, but I share my income reports every month online on One Hour Professor on how I'm getting revenue and everything. Last month, I think that one made like $1,700, right? Which is, you know, that's something. But most of it isn't from Amazon. It's mostly from display ads. So that particular site, I kind of abandoned for that reason. Then I had another one that was in like fashion that was my wife and I had obviously created and she kind of bowed out and I was like, well, I'm not all that interested in this topic. So I kind of bowed out at the same time. So there's been, every site, I don't have like a blanket statement. Every site, there's a specific reason that I kind of moved on. And I've also over time realized that it is definitely better because, you know, at one point I was managing like six or seven sites actively. I've realized if you really want to have any success, you've got to narrow it down and not work on too many at a time. So now the max I'll really work on actively at a time is two. So,
yeah, I totally agree. I think, I mean, over time I've seen, I guess the most common failures I see is people just giving up too soon or just not spending enough time in it. Like if you just push on, and you're doing the right things, you're probably going to get there eventually. It just might take longer than other sites, but
even with these sites, I would say I'm guilty of that, right? Like I definitely think I have two sites right now that have, one's making around 1700, one makes just over like, it's like 2200. And to some people I know they're like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. It's really just the tip of the iceberg with these two. But I just, for my own reasoning, I don't want to dive in further. I'd rather focus on like my own personal brand. I get more enjoyment out of that. So if I would have kept pushing on, I have no doubt that they probably could be a lot bigger than they are. But, you know, I just haven't done that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've all got those ones that we just started and never quite continue on with for whatever reason. But yeah.
Yeah. As long as they're making passive income, it's okay. You know, because it's all right, well, I guess I'll just sit here and collect a check then. I may end up selling those in the future too. But, you know, for now they're sitting.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So are you still teaching? Are you still a professor?
Yes. So when I originally started, I was teaching at three different schools as an adjunct and had like, honestly, I'd have like five or six courses a session, which was pretty significant. That's like every like 8 to 10 weeks, I'd have 5 to 6 courses. Two of the schools that I am still technically employed at have reduced their course load. So I barely ever teach at those anymore. I mean, once in a great while, I'll pick up a course. But there's one school that I'm a part of that I teach usually two courses a session. So it's two courses every 8 to 10 weeks. And honestly, it's been hard to leave that because I've been at it for such a long time, and every course I've taught, right, there's a process to it and a system to it, and I built out like everything I've had to build out to where it really just doesn't take that much time. So it's always been a nice thing to fall back on, like, hey, just in case my whole business disappears overnight, at least I've still got this. And it, you know, it's decent money for the amount of work. So I don't know, one day, I don't know what that number is. One day, hopefully I'll trust myself enough to leave. But yes, I am still teaching. And I don't mind teaching. I really don't. I actually like teaching, you know, people how to create online businesses, but I also enjoy just teaching students. It's, I think it's just good to be connected in that too. So
for sure. I mean, I'm sure you'd if you hated it that much, you would leave sooner, right?
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
for sure. Cool. So, so your blogs at the moment, you said you're kind of moving away from Amazon a bit. How are they primarily monetized, your portfolio?
So I am a little bit unique from most people, because I know a lot of people do like Amazon affiliates and various affiliates. I actually really found success with display ads and making revenue that way. I originally was pretty much all Google AdSense. And then I don't know if you ever saw this previously in my YouTube and everything, but I had issues with Google AdSense saying that I had invalid clicks, which is still, frankly, a mystery. The whole thing is kind of weird, and I don't know. It seems shady to me. So I was doing all that, and then I, because that happened, basically transitioned everything over to Ezoic, because they have like protections in place and can actually have a team that you can talk to help you with this kind of stuff. And they've done great. So they've been really good. So I pretty much have most of my, any of my display ads are there. But at this point, I've been really in the world of mostly display ads, probably 90% display ads and like 10% affiliate. That's probably where I was coming from. Now I'm starting to, because display ads are good, but in terms of a monetization form, it's pretty low, frankly. Like it's like the lowest hanging fruit. I mean, you can make decent money at it. I was able to do it. But what I've kind of gotten more into now is focused on actual affiliate marketing, not so much Amazon, but other companies out there, like software products, just products in general, right? Like all different types of software and services and things like that. And then also what I've been diving further into, or what I will be diving further into, is info products. So creating my own courses. I have a million different things in my head. I just have to like spit it all out, right? Like it's kind of tough, because creating courses isn't all that easy. It takes quite a bit of time. So I'll be diving further into that. But it's mostly, yeah, in the past it was mostly display and some affiliate. Now, personally, I'm shifting to much more affiliate myself. And then I will be doing informational. And the nice thing is with the display ads, I'm still making that passive income from those, right? Because the sites are just sitting there. But yeah, I'm definitely diving in more into affiliate. And I will say, anybody that's like starting or like has some success with a website, definitely investigate how to incorporate more than one monetization strategy, right? So even my 1 hour professor site, I have display ads that will only show up on certain pages. Like only certain pages that they're not making much money at all in any way. They may make a little bit of affiliate, but I think, okay, I could probably make a little bit more if I throw on display ads, right? Like on some pages, and then other pages, I have no display ads whatsoever. So I'm trying to kind of stack them, and I'll be throwing on the monetization of informational products as well. So that's how you really make a lot of money with sites, is when you're stacking different monetization models. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what makes you decide not to put ads on specific some pages?
So usually it comes down to who are the affiliates on the page, right?
Yeah.
And how much those affiliate engagements are worth. So for instance, one of the terms that I'm ranked near the top of Google, I'm not number one, I mean, depending on where you're at, but I'm like top three for like best online course platforms or online course platforms. So those particular softwares, they will pay, if you sign someone up, it'll pay you 30% recurring commission, right? Mm. So if I sign someone up today and they're paying 30 or they pay like $100 a month, I may make $30 a month for 10 months. Obviously that's very well paying, right? And that's like an extremely competitive keyword, by the way. So, but the point is that one, there's no point in putting display ads on there, right? Because if I do get a display ad, whoopee, you know, like someone clicks and it's, you know, 5, 10, maybe 15 cents versus, yeah, hey, I sign them up once and then I can make 100 or more off of each person. So it really depends on the page itself and who the affiliate is and what they're doing, right? It just all depends on that. So,
okay. Totally makes sense. Yeah. So, so at the moment, you're using Ozoic for this one site. I mean, is it using Ozoic across all of your sites in terms for ads or using other networks? Or
At this point, it is all Ozoic. I am using all of them. The other ad networks, there's, in my opinion, there is a false, I guess you could say, narrative out there that the idea is that you go from AdSense to Ozoic, what is it, to Mediavine, then to AdThrive. That's like what everyone thinks that it's supposed to go. And I have been working with, personally with Ozoic. They had reached out to me and we're working together. We've been kind of collaborating on some things for a while now. And understanding their technology and how it works and the artificial intelligence and the way that they optimize, I actually don't think that it would be in my best interest to move away from them, because I know that with time they get better. And many of the other networks, they're good and they use a part of artificial intelligence, but there's a lot more human interjection, if you will, into the whole process. And basically, on my own belief and what I've seen with my own sites and how they've increased, I just don't know that it would be worth switching, because they may be able to make me just a teeny bit more, or they'll make me less, which is never good, but they may be able to make me a teeny bit more, maybe. And if they do that, though, they may just inundate my entire site with ads. So I like Ozoic because they have the artificial component to it, but they also allow you to customize it a lot more than I think most people realize. Like, because you do DNS integration, I can technically run 50% of my site towards a version with Google AdSense, 50% with a version towards Ozoic. You know, there's different things that you can do there that I personally like. You can also limit the amount of ads. So, you know, I'm not trying to like just tout Ozoic here, but I personally very much believe in what they're doing, especially after understanding it better. So that's why I've stuck with them.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah, they're doing great things over there, I think. Yeah, they're definitely, moving that kind of, that business in the right direction, I think. It's a bit stale and a bit old, and
they're kind of showing, like I said, that's the whole, you know, go from here. They were like step two in the process, and now they're trying to help people realize, hey, we're not step two, we can keep going with you. And now that I understand it better, I very fully believe in that. So
so I guess kind of going on to your story, like you recently sold your biggest site, which I know has got kind of a crazy story attached to it. So, I'd love you to be able to share that. And
okay, this is a cautionary tale to everybody out there. So, so I recently published a guest post or a YouTube video about this, but I'll sum it up. I'll try to give a summarized version. So basically, I had my site. I put it up for auction and everything. Wasn't really sure what I was going to get for it. I ended up getting someone an all cash offer. They said, hey, I'll buy it for $500,000. And I was actually, they said like, I don't remember what they said, like $493,000. And I was like, it's gotta be 500 just to say $500,000. Right? Like, how cool is that? So I was like, and that really is the reason. It's kind of funny, but that really is. So I was like, it's gotta be this. So they eventually said, okay, we'll do that. They agreed on it, all cash offer, all was good. I was going through the whole process. Like, we had a handshake agreement, went through the process of starting to transition things over. So obviously, you know, Mark, you know this, but when you're selling a site, you have to transition over all the partnerships. So for instance, it was monetized with Ozoic. Well, I got to talk to Ozoic and transition that over. And, you know, I have to talk to my various affiliate programs and say, hey, this is a new owner. I'm selling the site, yada, yada. So everything was going fine, and literally like at the 11th hour, one of the partners who accounted for like 50 to 60% of the revenue, I went out to them and, you know, I had already told them before, like, hey, we're going to transition over. And they said, okay, no problem. We'll give them the same deal, yada, yada. So I was transitioning over, and in that process, and I never will understand exactly why. I know it was an internal decision. I don't know exactly why. But they basically decided, you know what, the contract that we have with you is null and void, and we are not just going to not transition over the partnership, but we are closing out your access to our API. So they provided me with an API, which provided me with some data, which I would use to aggregate things on my site. And they basically said that. So within about, you know, a couple hours, I went from a $500,000 sale, right, to, oh my God, my site doesn't even work anymore because I don't have their API data. And by the way, I no longer have this ability to monetize this way because I was making some money with them, the things I was doing. So that was a very terrible time in my life. That was a really rough, you know, I think it was about 48 hours because my thing at that point was, okay, you know, oh, you know, this is no good. I'm no longer making money with them. But forget about that for a minute. Let's talk about the fact that my site wasn't working correctly anymore. And if I didn't get this fixed and Google saw it before I got it fixed, I could lose all my rankings. And then my whole site tanks, the whole deal falls through, and then I just have a site that's worth nothing. So it was absolutely awful to have to deal with that. But what ended up happening was we went through the whole process. I found another partner, right, who wasn't as lucrative. And, you know, I already knew they weren't as lucrative because I tested them before. But it was still lucrative, and we were able to, I literally hired two teams on two different staging environments to try to get that up as quick as possible. I got that patch in there. We fixed the site. And essentially, you know, talking to the original buyer, I was like, I'm going to back out of the sale because obviously who would still want the site after what just happened? And he actually stopped me, and I'm very thankful for that. And he said, no, I'm still interested. You know, but we have to adjust the valuation. So basically, I was able to sell the site for $277 is what I walked out of the deal with. So, yeah, I lost, you know, quite $236,000 doing absolutely nothing and just kind of sitting there and just kind of being a victim in the whole thing. But, you know, that's part of the business. It was a rough thing, but people are like, you know, how do you handle it? It's like, well, I mean, what am I going to do, dwell on it? There's really no point in being upset about it anymore. And really now I'm kind of like, you know, I did this once and I'm pretty confident in my abilities that I can do something bigger even again. So it is what it is. But yeah, it hurt. It definitely wasn't a good thing.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Yeah. I can imagine how stressful that was.
Yeah. Like I said, it wasn't just, you know, you get, hey, you just lost over $200,000 in your head. And then you get, oh, wait, there's no time to worry about that because your site is not functioning. So that was my biggest worry. You know, it wasn't just that they pulled out of the deal. It was that they cut off all the data. And that was kind of crazy. And like, really looking back, the only thing I think I should have done different, because what happened was pretty much unavoidable. It was an internal decision. I couldn't have possibly changed it. I think what I should have done is when I originally signed up to work with them in a partnership agreement, I should have said, okay, if you're gonna pause your data feed, you need to give me like 72 hour notice, or, you know, something like that. That's like my one learning that I could have done. So, and someone brought up a really good point. This was a really interesting thing. It was a comment on my YouTube because I created that video. They said, you know what you should have done is you should have in the beginning, which does make sense. If I would have formed an LLC, okay, if I would have formed an LLC in the beginning, signed everything up as an LLC in the beginning, I could have technically just given them that access to the LLC and I never would have had to transition over any partnerships, which is a pretty interesting idea. The problem with it was even if I, you know, later would have created an LLC, it would have been like, okay, now I've got to transition to the LLC. And then they would have said, you know, maybe, hey, we're going to stop this partnership right then and there. Right. So like it never would have even gotten to where it did. So, but that was an interesting strategy. I was like, man, that's true. I could have just given someone an LLC and they would have had access to the whole site. And, but you know, too little too late, it doesn't matter. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice of them just to cut it off straight away for sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It was, and the crazy thing was like, that this partner that I worked with, we worked together for, I think it was like, I don't remember how many years exactly. I think it was like 3 years or like 3.5 years, something like that. It was a while. It wasn't like it was just overnight. And the worry that they had, I still don't think was warranted. Because what happened was their data was presented on the site. And then some of the way that the data was presented, it wasn't by any means shady, but it was like, okay, is this 100% truth? So it's, I can't disclose, you know, what the niche is because of the new buyer and everything, but it's hard to explain it. But basically there was this little sliver of like, okay, there's a little bit of uncertainty around some of the data. That's kind of the farthest I can go with it. So their worry was, well, if this happens, then this could happen. You know, they were thinking like worst case scenario. But the thing was, we worked together for so many years and nothing bad ever happened, right? Like it was always positive, always good. They were making money. I was making money. The people who received the data were happy because they were getting the information. So, you know, executive decision on their end. And I was a victim kind of in that. So,
yeah. So it was a special deal that you negotiated for the API. It's not, it wasn't a public API as such. You
kinda... It was... So technically other people could use the API, but because I worked with them, we did negotiate in the beginning, hey, this is kind of how we're going to structure it. So it was a little bit custom. And yeah, I mean the API, they actually reached out to me, right? So that was the whole thing. I think they look for particular sites that match their criteria or whatever, and then they'll reach out to them directly. It wasn't something to where I reached out to them and, you know, originally. So they ended up reaching out to me and thank God they did. You know, I made a lot of money with them and I'm happy with it. I may create another site in a similar space to where I may even use them again, but I can't say that what they did didn't sting. It just is what it is. So,
yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a story that is.
Yeah. It was an awful. So yeah. Cautionary tale to anyone out there. Yeah. And I actually, it's funny because after I posted the video, I'd say probably about five people who had a very similar thing done to them. They had I went to go sell the site and a partner, you know, they took away X amount of dollars from the whole thing just because they didn't want to continue the partnership. So I wish that wouldn't happen. And it doesn't always make sense to me because usually if you're in a partnership and it makes a lot of money, it's not just making money for you, it's making a lot of money for them too. So it's kind of weird to me how these companies back out of these things, but that's what they do sometimes, and you know it's not under your control. So,
have you managed to move on and enjoy the fact you had $277,000 in your bank account? Or
absolutely, yeah. So we've had taxes come into that. So that, you know, the government's like, hey, give me my cut because you know they did so much. So basically, walking away money was about $200,000, and actually, oddly enough, my wife and I. I've been contemplating a move to Arizona. I'm in Illinois, currently Chicago area, and we've been contemplating a move to a warmer climate. So we are going to do Arizona. Now we're actually going in, today's Friday. Actually, I'm going tomorrow to Las Vegas, Nevada to see if I have any interest in moving to Nevada. I'm not sure that I do or not. But yes, we'll be moving to a warmer climate with it. And I can't complain about that. So it's still a heck of a lot of money. Like if you talk to me, you won't hear me complaining about it, but if I were to say that, you know, losing that amount of money didn't sting, I'd definitely be lying. So,
yeah, sure. Okay, cool. And you mentioned just at the start there, you sold another couple of your sites recently as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So I've sold out of my portfolio. I think it was at one point, I think it was at 10 or so. No, it would have been at 9. I sold my biggest site. And then what was it? I think it was in, was it 2020 or 2019? No, in 2019, I had also sold a site. It was a much smaller site. I think I sold it for like, it was like 18,000 or something like that. And that was just a site that, hey, it needs some work and I'm not doing anything. So I'm just going to get rid of this one. So I had sold that one. And I'm trying to, like I said, I may end up selling a few more of my sites just because I'm trying to kind of consolidate down. Because I, you know, like I said before, I subscribe to the theory of like, I can make all these different sites and hire all these people to manage all these sites. And I've realized that I'm pretty good at managing the sites myself. And I kind of need to really focus on them. So I am consolidating down over time. And right now, since we're buying a house, there will be no selling of any sites because, you know, I need the income to keep coming and the revenue so that people see. But after we buy that house and are settled in, there's a real possibility that I may sell a site or two, another one, or two.
Yeah, cool. See, you've tried a few different business models over time. And I guess, you know, some other income you get is through YouTube, but you've tried a few other things over the years. Is that right?
Yeah, I've... So I have shiny object syndrome. It's definitely more under control than it used to be. But I've definitely tried quite a bit of different things. So I originally tried to complete. So the original, when I created 1 Hour Professor, which was like right around when I started, right? When I created that brand, my original thing was I had discovered Pat Flynn, Smart Passive Income. And I was like, I'm going to beat that little guy. I'm going to create all these courses. I'm going to make all this money. And you don't know what you don't know. So I was like, well, that's stupid. You know, looking back, I laugh. Like, he's very good at what he does. And basically, I started out and I was like, I'm going to do that and I'm going to sell courses, right? That was my whole thing. 1 Hour Professor, 1 hour long courses that teach people things. Well, guess what? It's not that easy, especially if nobody knows who you are, right? So when I had started out, I actually did that. That didn't work out for me. And I tried a bunch of other different site ideas that were frankly pretty stupid. I basically had kind of dove into the world of display advertising and found some success there with my first big site. I also had created sites, mostly display ad focused, Amazon affiliate, kind of like a hybrid, but still mostly making most in display. I did a little bit of Amazon FBA as well. It was just a calendar that I had created, but I had success with it. It made me like $2,000 a year, and it didn't take that much work. So I did that. And then, I got more into affiliate. I've done YouTube, obviously. I've been doing YouTube myself for some time. We also, my wife and I co-own some channels where it's kind of like an interesting business model. Not a lot of people talk about where instead of sitting in front of a camera like this talking, right? These YouTube channels are like almost like narrative in a way. And you know, people have probably seen them to where it's like the 10 coolest houses in Britain, you know, or something like that. And then it's just a voiceover and they're kind of showing. So we've been doing stuff like that as an example. So we do have a few channels that are like that, which has been an interesting business model. Now I've mostly personally focused on affiliate, higher level affiliate things that I didn't do in the past. And then I'm going to be focusing more on info products. The only thing I really haven't dove in, I think, is probably like podcasting. That's probably like the one thing. And that's just because, I mean, there's just more effort there that I didn't want to put forth. So I guess chalk that one up to laziness. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you tried a few things, but it sounds like you've got some good plans and direction kind of going forward for what you want to do with the brand and.
I'll say, anybody that's like in this, if they're getting to that point to where they're getting scatterbrained, they're doing all these different things, take a deep breath and try to narrow your focus. That would be my advice, because I was one of those that was kind of like doing everything. And I also have like social media groups, like Facebook groups and all this stuff. I was doing a lot of different things, and I've realized in order to really do well, you kind of got to focus your energy, right? So I have been consolidating that down, but it's good though, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people will write about or talk about certain things and they don't really have much experience. I do have a lot of experience in a lot of different things because I'm just curious by nature, and it's hard, you know, because you see this thing over here and you're like, here's an interesting business model. Let me try that. So I've been blessed in the sense that I've been able to take those risks. And my portfolio of sites has been able to kind of carry me as with passive income to be able to do those things, which is cool.
Yeah. You could do them all, but just don't do them in parallel. Do them sequentially.
Try to focus. Well, here's my biggest thing now, because it's funny, because I've talked to some people and like, I don't really know what to do. And I've had a little success here and I've had a little bit more success here and then this. And I'm like, okay, where have you had the most success? And they're like, oh, in this thing. I'm like, do that thing. Like, just keep doing that thing. Go as hard as you can on that. You'll probably grow really well. And then once you get to a point, you can maybe then look into the other things almost as like a hobby, kind of like testing things out. So.
I entirely agree. Would you, in terms of like the way that you think about your portfolio of sites, like, would you say that you're kind of someone who, it sounds like you are, but someone who will work on a site for a long period of time before considering selling? It's not like that's not the immediate thing. Or, you know, are you more of a kind of flipper type, or buy a site, grow it for a few months and flip it for a profit?
How
do you kind of think about things?
So this is, again, my shiny object syndrome thing kicking in. I'll explain that in a second. I've pretty much been, so when I have come up with a site idea, it has pretty much always been, okay, I have a site idea. I'm going to go buy the domain. I'm going to put the theme on. I'm going to create this thing from scratch. I'm going to do everything 100% from scratch. And then I'm going to build it up. And then in the past, it was build it up, and then just let it sit and then hire a team to keep putting content in. And then it just grows over time. And there's a site right now that I'm doing that with really well. Last month, I think it hit over like $3,200 in earnings. And I honestly, and I mean this, Mark, I probably put in, between everybody that's working with it, I probably put in, I'd say maybe like an hour or two a month. I mean, I really barely even touch the site, but it's growing, right? And it keeps going because I put a team in place. So that's that site, and that site's doing really well. That's like what I've done in the past primarily was that. Now I'm getting a little bit more comfortable with, hey, it's not that terrible of an idea to sell a site. especially if you've owned it for, like, in the US anyway, more than 2 years, because then it's long-term capital gains is how it's taxed. So you pay less taxes on it. And, you know, that, like, my thing now is whenever I'm looking at a site is, okay, is it going to make this same amount for whatever the monthly revenue multiplier is? So, like, okay, if it's going to sell for 30x, is it going to make the same amount of money for 30 more months? That's essentially, and then you got to take away taxes, so like 25 months, whatever. And frankly, if it's a site that's just sitting there, usually the answer to that is no. Like, it's not going to keep making that. And I'm aware of that. So then I think, okay, I should probably sell this thing because, you know, it's just going to start slowly dying over time. Because if you're not paying attention to a site, that's what it's going to do. And if you don't have a team assigned to it, that's what it's going to do. So I will sell that way. But mostly I have been kind of, let's build and either let it sit, or if the site is right, like the one I'm working on now, I'd happily assign a team to it to keep building it and keep making it better for the most part. But I am thinking about one experiment that I've thought about, I haven't done it yet, is flipping to 100,000. So it's literally going to be the idea of, let me go into, like, you know, Flippo or one of these places where I can get a cheap site that's actually a pretty decent deal and has something going on and is making, you know, like whatever, $200-$500 a month. Take it, increase the earnings, flip it, go buy another one, flip it, and then probably, you know, try to get to $100,000 flip and then say, guys, that's how you could do it. So it's an interesting experiment that I want to do. I haven't done it yet, but it's definitely an experiment that I thought about doing for sure.
Okay, that sounds fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Start with a budget of, like, I don't know, $500 or whatever, and you keep flipping it until.
Well, I'd buy a site for probably like under 5,000 or something like that, you know, yeah. And then take it, grow it, and then flip it. And then grab another one and then flip it. So I think it'd be, because everyone always does that with, like, I've seen that with, like, people do it with, like, Craigslist, right? Like, they'll start with, like, a paperclip and then they have a house by the end of it, right? So I just think that'd be a really interesting case study. It'd also be kind of tough because there's always some variables that you don't know about sites, right? So I think it would be definitely challenging. I'm not doing it yet, but in the future I would at some point like to do it. I just think it'd be really cool to be able to do that. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it appeals to me because I'm over the years, not so much these days, but I've always been into, like, poker. Mm-hmm. And people do about, like, you know, they start at the lowest stakes, you know, with like $50 or whatever, and then turn it into like $10,000 or whatever over a period of time. And they just keep going up the stakes as they kind of build their bankroll. And that sounds like similar to that.
Yeah, so I'm actually a big poker player too. I'm a big Hold'em. I don't do Omaha so much, but Texas Hold'em I'm a big fan of. And I've played countless hours of poker. So.
Yeah, me too. I was, I'd like to get back to it, actually. I was into it a lot, like, many years ago. I read a crazy number of books on strategy and stuff. And
Did you ever do the online stuff at all, or was it mostly like local? Or
I've done online. I prefer live. I'm just seem to be a better player live as well. I think it's just like more patience when I'm playing live. And so I played in some like reasonably like high, big entry tournaments, like we cost quite a bit of money to enter.
Yeah, the higher stakes in that. Yeah.
Yeah, but like. Yeah, online's good, but because the convenience. But I prefer playing live.
I don't know about you. Yeah, actually, so I have a friend who does that still full time. That's his job. I've tried multiple times to really get into it, and I make the dumb moves. I go on tilt a little bit. I make some dumb moves, and I usually, especially online, the beats that you get online, I've never seen anything like it personally. So, like, I feel like in person is probably better because you are more patient, but. Like, I don't know if you're talking about Hold'em specifically, but that can be pretty boring. I mean, you're sitting for, you know, you may not do anything for an hour and a half, and then you make one move and then you can make a lot. So, yeah, I just pretty much don't even play because, number one, we can't even do online gambling in the U.S. They pretty much outlawed it. And then, you know, live, I'm not going to go sit at a casino for 8 or 9 hours. You know, like, that's just not something I'm willing to do. So I've had more success with this. So now I'm going to gamble here instead.
Yeah. Online is difficult as well because there's the solvers now in poker where, you know, people can sit in front of a computer and poker's, especially Hold'em, is like a solved game. So people just sit there with a poker window open and just solving it in the, you know,
that's how my one friend is like a savant when it comes to mathematics. So that, and also Omaha has a lot more variables, but it's kind of a similar thing to where he could just sit there and be like, oh, my odds of winning are X. You know, he just knows that. And I definitely don't. I'm not that good with numbers. So.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. So when it comes to, you mentioned like, you know, when you're starting a new site, you come up with an idea, like take us through your thought process for like, how do you come about coming up with a new idea and picking a niche?
Yeah. So, it really depends on, like my motivation, I guess at the time. So really what it comes down to is if I'm looking, okay. So if I'm looking to create a new site, I will first look at, like the topic. I try not to go too broad with my topics. I go broad, but not super, super broad. Like I wouldn't create a site about animals, right? I would create a site about a specific breed of animals. Okay. So I do niche down a little bit. I don't niche down, you know, cause I know like some people will create a website on the best vacuum cleaner 2021, right? Like some people will do that. I'd never go that far down, but I do niche down a little bit. And when I do it, when I'm looking at a site, I, you know, aside from doing keyword research to determine how viable it is, right, to see just how much volume there is and trying to think of kind of like the silos of the site. So not just, okay, this is going to be the main keyword, right? Like this is the main keyword that I want to do. And then what are some other topics that are closely related to that? Is usually I'll do that kind of research to find out kind of keyword volumes, and I'll just add up all the volume to see how much it could potentially get to monthly. And then I usually add even more because those tools aren't always perfect. So I'll do that. But the other big thing that I think a lot of people don't think of from the beginning, and it's not like I'm guaranteeing anything, but I always look at also the monetization strategies. So I always say, okay, it has to have at least three legitimate monetization strategies that I can eventually put forth to make more money with it. Because a lot of people are like, okay, I'm going to create a site and I'm going to put Amazon affiliates on it. Okay, great. What else can you do? Because Amazon, you know, right now it's okay. It's definitely not as good as it once was. And what if Amazon completely goes away, right? Like that's a very possible thing, at least in the US and everything with the way that it's been kind of flowing over the years. Nobody knows except for Jeff Bezos. But yeah, that's like the way that I look at it. So I look at that and then I think, okay, how else can I monetize this? And then obviously I look at the competitive landscape. So it's really just the keyword research to determine volume. And then how can we monetize it? And then in the competitive landscape, and I've got to look and basically see and say, okay, you know, there's a hole in this particular niche or area based on what I'm seeing compared to all other people. I will tell you if you're creating a site, if you can find a site that has, you know, on a specific topic or focused on a specific community of people that doesn't have a lot of competitors, like under 5 or 10, and that does exist out there, those are where you can really make a killing, because you could just walk in and with a little bit of link building and decent content, you can pretty much monopolize kind of most of the search traffic with that. So,
yeah. So, okay. That makes sense. So, I mean, so when you first start out kind of with that kind of idea and the keyword research kind of process you go through, I mean, do you kind of find yourself going down a rabbit hole to find a niche, or are you?
Yeah. So, it depends, you know, I do go down a little bit of a rabbit hole. So I usually, it's so hard to explain the way that I think about it. So I usually will think of like a broad concept, like, okay, we'll just say dogs, right? I'm just going to say dogs. So if someone's like, I'm going to make a website about dogs. Well, then I'm going to say, okay, well, now you're going to make a website about dogs. Let's look at the competitive landscape. Okay, most of the domain authorities of dog websites are in the 70s, 80 maybe. They're super high. Yeah, you can, you know, create a dog website and start focusing on low competition, low search volume keywords and start to make a name for yourself. But that's going to take you years and years and years. And you're really going to have to do a lot of link building to really grow because you're in such a competitive area. But instead of that, let's focus on a dog website that's on like a particular breed that has a lot of search volume. So for example, you could focus on golden retriever dogs, right? Let's create a website on golden retriever dogs. That is going to be a lot less competitive. And it's still, I mean, I don't know what the search volume offhand is, but if that site has the volume of, you know, that could potentially get 150, 200,000 searches a month, that's very, very much worth it, right? So I like to go down. I have found as I've gotten more experience that I've been willing to scale up and take those bigger risks, right? Like I have one site with my wife that's focused on fashion. I mean, it's about fashion. That's the site, right? Specifically women's fashion. And obviously not my number one topic, something that I really am passionate about, but I was like, hey, it looks interesting. My wife really likes that stuff. And we went into it and we started to build, and we got links and this, that, and the other, and we made, you know, we make some money, but that makes like maybe between 100 to 150 bucks a month because it's so competitive and it's such a difficult thing because we had to do a lot of link building to get to it. So, for me, when I'm looking at them, I'll try to niche down a little bit. And as long as it's viable and can be big enough, I'm willing to go into it. But I've just found that if you're going to go really broad, like if you're going to go broad and say, okay, I'm going to make a website about pets, all kinds of pets, or I'm going to make a website about houses or house decor or that kind of stuff, you're going to have to go all in for years to really make that into a big thing. And the level of commitment that I like is, hey, let me try to find this niche that's a little bit smaller, can still be pretty lucrative, and has very little competition. Let me focus there because it's just so much easier. Like it's so much, it's infinitely easier to really carve out a name for yourself there and grow it to where, yeah, you may have a ceiling on the site of $5,000 or $10,000 a month. But if you do that three times, you're making really good money. And that's what I did previously. That's how I built my portfolio site outs, right? Like I did that over and over and I made really good money from numerous different sites. And then it's nice too, because you're not just, if this one site goes down or gets hit by an algorithm, I'm not going to be broke overnight, right? So you diversified a little bit too. So that's kind of the way that I've done it. But I have tried to do a little bit more broad stuff, but I've just found that it's going to take some pretty intense, concentration to really get to where you'd like with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you're planning on going broad, it's still better to start off narrow. So if you're doing a pet site, start off with the golden retriever dog or the bearded dragons or some sort of fish. Absolutely. Or whatever. Yep. And just fill that out completely. So it's almost just all about fish and then move on to the next silo. And the next silo, eventually it'll be broad.
Site,
but you just can't write one article on every pet category and then write another one article on every pet category. You'd give up probably before you.
And that's the interesting thing. And then because my thing too is when I start a site, I do what I call a keyword dump, which is literally I do the keyword research and then I dump like thousands of keywords into a spreadsheet, just so that I'm not creating similar topics. And there's a whole thought process behind it. But I do that and then I'm looking at it and I'll usually choose, okay, I'm going to do the lowest competition and frankly, pretty low volume keywords. And I'll write up, 50 or whatever, 100 of those. And then you put them up and it's like, it's tough because only like a couple of them are going to really take hold in the beginning. So then you'd have to kind of adjust your silo and just focus on that particular topic. So I don't know, it gets a little tough. But there's definitely something to be said for focusing on those silos one at a time. My biggest thing and where I struggled with it in the past is, okay, I've got to focus on the silo, but how do you discover what that silo is? Well, you have to write a lot of different content, a lot of different things to see what's really taking hold. And then you start building out on that silo. And then if that silo is not showing any gratification or not showing any positive reinforcement, then it's like, well, maybe I chose the wrong silo. So that's been kind of one of the things that I've personally struggled with in going that route. But frankly, I think the bigger thing is I was creating sites on things that, like I said, it was about fashion. I'm not the most fashionable guy in the world. My wife literally tells me what to wear. It's just easier on me. So I just like, here, I literally, like, if we're going out, I'm like, can you just go into my closet and pick stuff? Because it's just easier than me trying to figure it out. So I'm not a fashion guy. So I would say, I know everyone's like, oh, follow your passions. Like, and if you have a passion that doesn't pay anything, that's not going to work. But if you have a site or you're creating a site, at least have some interest or some sort of some passion into it to where it can hold your interest for a long time. So,
yeah. So you mentioned kind of silos like just then. So like, how do you think about like your site structure when you're starting a new site? Is it, what's the thought
process behind that? So anytime I come out with any type of idea or just site idea in general, I'm always looking at it from a silo perspective and thinking, okay, just kind of high level, where like I'll go into a spreadsheet. Before I create a site, I probably spend a good like 5 to 10 hours inside of an Excel document or a Google sheet, right? Because I'm trying to really structure it and understand, okay, how can I organize this? and where does each of these fall? So like there's product recommendations here, and then there's informational resources, like almost like databases of information that I can provide to people here. Like with the golden retriever thing, right? It might be, okay, we have product reviews here, and that's going to be one silo, right? So we're going to have product reviews. And then we may have veterinarians, like specialists with golden retrievers, obviously a generic example, but kind of the idea, okay, that's an informational hub that we can create there with a silo. And then we can talk about their diet, and then we can talk about their health. You know, like I always think in those terms. And what I like to do is I'm a big fan of like data. Data never lies. It doesn't lie. It doesn't matter who you are. It's always going to tell you the truth. So when you're looking at things, that's why I'm a big fan of exporting just a pretty large amount of data and then looking at that and categorizing off of that, because then I'm able to kind of say, okay, what I usually will create like a category inside of an Excel spreadsheet. So I'll have all the keyword data and then I'll have category. And then I'm just assigning, okay, these keywords are about diet. These keywords are about this thing. So I like to look at it that way in a silo, like architecture way in the beginning. And then, yeah, I'll usually kind of just, like I said, I'll basically throw up, you know, 10, 20, 30 articles up from all over the place pretty much. And then I'll see what takes hold. And then I will start to focus on whatever was taking hold. That's usually how I do it. And then I'll build out that silo and then go to the next. But like I said, my problem in the past is I've been working on sites where I'm not passionate. I just don't care, because that takes patience too. Because when you create a silo, it's almost like creating a new site. Like you'll get some traffic in the beginning with that silo, but you need to keep focused on that silo in order to really build it out. And if you're kind of like how I have been, because I've created sites in the wrong areas to where you have no interest, then you create like five articles. Maybe we should try this one because you want to try the other one. And then maybe we should try this one. And then nothing really big ever happens. So.
Yeah, totally. I've been there myself.
yeah. So there's definitely some patience needed for sure. And I frankly haven't done much of that in the past I haven't done many really broad sites. I've done basically two really broad sites. One of them is on like a holding pattern and it's just sitting there. It's the fashion one because I just don't care. And then I have another one that we're working on, and we are doing exactly what I said with the silo stuff. And it's taking time, but it's starting to show some positive things. So,
yeah. Awesome. And in terms of like social media channels, is that something that you look at when building out sites? Do you consider social media as a good?
Yeah. So social traffic? I pretty much hate social media, to be honest with you. The only thing that I like is I really like Facebook groups because it allows you to create a community around the topic. So oftentimes, and this is like a helpful hint, people are like, okay, well, I got to create the site, and you know, they're like, I got to create an email list and I got to get people into the email list. How do I get them in? One of the best things I've done is I will create a site, and at the same time, I'll create a Facebook group with it. And what I do is I say, hey, join our email list in order to join our Facebook group, our Facebook community. That actually has worked really well. I like the Facebook groups because when I create sites, the most success I've ever had is created sites with people who have a particular problem, right? So like as an example, and this isn't a site I do because it's in the medical area, but like if you wanted to focus on like a site that was all about people who had breast cancer or something like that, you could create the site, have a bunch of information about that, and then also create a Facebook group for people who have breast cancer or survivors of breast cancer. Again, I don't recommend this because it's medical and there's a lot of different things that make that more difficult now with Google. But generally speaking, I've had a lot of success with that because not only are you getting the information out there and getting your site and you're drawing people into that, but you're also now creating a community of people who are all sharing in the same issues, if you will. So they all have not the same, but similar problems. So a lot of times you can use those Facebook groups to also sell affiliate things or informational if you go that route. I haven't personally done that, but also like different products, informational thing like that. But also that was when I did FBA, when I did Amazon FBA, that's how I was selling a lot of the product that I created, was in the Facebook group, right? So it's just getting those people of that same community, that same passion, and then creating a site around it. And then a Facebook group as a compliment is nice because now you have a whole community of those people, right? And they're all really passionate about it. So you just tie it all together. And that's like the only social media that I really do. I've heard good things about Pinterest. I've never been able to really dive in and master that. So I'm not a big social media guy. I'm mostly an SEO guy. I've definitely been focused on that more.
Yeah, that's really interesting the way you said about using Facebook groups, like to you get people to your site and then you get them to join your mailing list to get to the Facebook group. So, you know, because I've always done it the other way around. I try to get people to join the Facebook group. And then one of the questions you ask when joining the Facebook group is, what's your email address? And try and get them on the email address.
I've actually done it both ways. So I even have it to where when they join, like sometimes that, or I'll use, it really depends. It's like chicken before the egg, right? Like it's kind of hard to choose which one. So something interesting that happened to me was I had a site to where I ranked for a very broad term in Facebook. If somebody typed in a specific breed of an animal, we'll leave it at that, a specific breed, so not the Labrador Retriever one, by the way, the Golden Retriever I mentioned earlier, but kind of like that same idea, right? And when they typed in the name of that animal, my site was number one. My Facebook group, rather, was number one. I was getting like 50 to 100 people a day signing up to that. It was crazy. So I ended up doing exactly what you're saying. Like, hey, do you want to receive a free email from this? I would say really, if you can do both, that's kind of a good thing because it just complements each other. And if you grow that community along with your site, it really can be very beneficial down the road. There's a lot of ways to monetize those sites. You can also interview people. There's a lot of things that you can do with that community. So,
yeah, no, I really like that because, because the way that I've done it in the past with Facebook groups is not necessarily successful. Like if you can do what you say and rank the Facebook group, that's good. But sometimes it's just Facebook groups just don't get found. And they're, but if you're doing it the other way around, like I'm really good at ranking sites for SEO, like yourself, if you can get people coming to your site and then push them to the group,
that's worked really, really well for me. Yeah. I have too many Facebook groups with, I don't even know, over 5,000 people at this point. And I will say it becomes, because I know people are thinking, okay, well, if you do that, that's great. But then you have to manage the Facebook group, right? Well, what I will say is that Facebook has done a very good job in that they have a lot of different ways to kind of monitor your groups now. So you can basically say, okay, if anyone says any swear word, I want that flagged and I want to see it. So you could do that. And then you're going to get people who spam. It's so annoying, but you're going to get people who spam. So like a way to safeguard yourself against that is you always ask the questions. You're familiar with that because you just mentioned that. You ask the questions in the beginning, and if they're not answering anything, decline. Every time, decline them. So that works. But yeah, and then what I did with the one group that had grown really big because I was ranking organically on Facebook for a particular term is I ended up, they gave you the ability within Facebook, their group tools, to see the most engaged people, like the people that are most active in the group. I actually just reached out to like the top three most active. And then I said, hey, would you be willing to help me monitor this? And I can't pay you, but you're obviously pretty passionate about it anyway. They've said yes. And then every year I gave them a gift card, not a big deal. So I just give them a gift card every year around Christmas time saying, hey, thanks, really appreciate you. Best $50 I ever spent on per person, like it was like two or three people. And then you're really not in it very often. And they monitor it and they care way more than you do. So
exactly. Yeah. They're probably better moderators than you.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to try that. I hadn't really thought about trying it that way around, but
it works, especially if you're already getting traffic, use your Facebook group as an opt-in or as a bonus to any opt-in that you already have. And then tell them they have to give their email in order to join it. It works very, very well. I feel like in the beginning, I wasn't ranking for that, but I feel like what happens is as Facebook sees, I don't know exactly how their algorithm for Facebook groups work, but I feel like from what I've seen is that as you add more groups, they start to realize, okay, this person is driving in more members from outside into our platform, into their group. So they must be good. And then the other thing is I never, ever leave my Facebook groups open either. So my Facebook groups are always that they have to request access every single time. I've never just had an open one that anyone can join anytime because there's so many spammers. So I always, always do that. And it's worked for me. So
cool. Yeah, I kind of give it. Yeah, I mean, I've had pretty good success with Pinterest, but that's the only one I use because it's more of a visual. It's a search engine as opposed to a social media that's transient. But groups are great if you can get them to work. So I'd kind of given up on that route, but I'm going to go for it again now with what you said. Yeah, for sure. Cool. And in terms of link building, do you actively do link building
absolutely.
Or not?
I'm totally in the link building, all in on link building camp. And the reason is, you guys, so I know some people are like, you don't need to do link building, and other people say you do need to do it. So you could say whatever you want. Okay. Anybody could say whatever they want. They're entitled to their opinion. But here's the reality of me. I've had a portfolio of sites for some time, and I have found that every single site that I have done link building on in a way that's organic. So like, I like to do like shotgun skyscraper, like stuff that I'm not just going out, and I'm not talking about let's go out and buy 100 links. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about earning links, going out, creating good content and earning links. When I have done that with a site, literally every single time you can see that the graph goes up and to the right very, very quickly. Case in point, so if people were to look, if they go to Ahrefs and look at the 1R Professor website, you will see I started really doing link building in the form of guest posting. I started really guest posting on high domain authority sites in about July of 2020 is when I really started that. My site has literally skyrocketed in terms of the traffic that I'm getting, the domain authority, everything. And that's, I solely attribute that to the links that I built, because you have to remember my site has been around. I don't even know now how long the site, it's been for like 7 or 8 years it's been around, and it really didn't do much for years and years and years. All of a sudden I started to do this, and all of a sudden I started to rank for a lot of different things that I wanted to rank for in the past. So I'm a huge, huge advocate of building links. I think that it depends on your niche too. So with 1R Professor, it's an online business, which is extremely competitive, right? Like one of the most competitive areas. And now I'm comfortable enough in competing in this area. But I have other sites that, you know, there, you know, maybe five other sites out there that I can find focused on the niche, right? So it's really low hanging fruit. I'll do like for one of them, I created a guide. I did one skyscraper campaign. I got like 10 or 15 links, and that's all it took. My domain authority is like, I don't even know, 20 or 30 in Ahrefs. And I started to rank for a ton of stuff, and now I'm getting organic links, and now I really don't have to do much. So it does definitely depend on your niche. Like, you don't have to get, you know, hundreds of links in every niche. That's not what I'm saying. But there's definitely, depending on the niche, I'm a huge advocate of link building. Every time I've done it, I've seen my traffic skyrocket on every single site that I've ever owned versus not doing it and not seeing anything happen. So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, clearly it's a ranking factor. Google has said as much, it's a ranking factor. Yep. It has been for, you know, even it's been the biggest ranking factor for a long time. So I totally agree with you. Like, why would you do all of the other things and just miss that one out? And it really boils down to because it's difficult, right? I think people just avoid it because it's hard. Until you've got a process around it. I think that's the main driver. And there's risk associated, right? If you don't do it properly, like the way you're speaking about is doing it properly. If you're doing it badly, a bad job, and buying links, dodgy links, then yeah, there's a risk associated with that, and you know, you could pay for that decision. But
I usually am an advocate of like because some people are like, well, should I ever buy links? And I think that, so there's kind of a skill, and I'm sure you have this skill, some people, I don't know if everyone listening does, but there is a skill to looking at a domain and saying, is this domain worth getting a link from? There is a set of skills. You have to look at where their outgoing links are already pointing. You have to look at their traffic. You have to look at their domain authority, you know, where their quote unquote neighborhood is in terms of like other sites that are like them. So there is a skill to that. But once you've mastered that, if you once in a while think that it makes sense to buy a link or buy like the ability to do a guest post, I think some people can do that. I really don't, because I'm just like, if it costs money, I'm not doing it. Like, it's just like my personal thought is it's just not worth it to me. But yeah, generally speaking, like, I think there can be places here and there if you have the expertise. But generally, 100%, I'd say it's much better to just do the outreach, earn links organically, you know, and go back and forth with these people and see where it takes you. But yeah, I'm 100% in the, you have to do link building. And like you said, a lot of people don't want to do it because it's hard. It's not fun. But in a weird way, I almost enjoy it because I'm just really competitive in general. So I kind of enjoy it because I'm like, yeah, I got a link from this and this guy didn't, you know, like, and I'll tell you, when I go into a niche, I literally go in and I have nothing against the people that I'm going against. but I'm, you know, of the mentality of like, this is probably a great person. They probably have a nice family. That's all wonderful. But I am here to destroy them. Like, that's kind of my, like, that's how I go. And it doesn't always work that way. And sometimes I get destroyed, right? Like in some of the niches that I go into, but I have that mentality to where like, I am going to crush them. And that doesn't always work, but you know, it's nothing personal. It's what motivates me. It's what keeps me going to say, I look at them and I put a target on their back and I'm like, I'm going to get this person. That's what I always do. And usually it's like, when I started when I was a professor, I was going to go after Pat Flynn. Right. And how did that work out? Right. So it's just that mentality of doing that. So that's how I usually go about when I focus on a niche. That's how I do it. So,
yeah, I've never quite heard it put in that way. And for sure, I'm the same. Like, you build up your competitor list and like they become like the hated.
Like Rocky IV when he's got Drago and he's crumpling up the paper and all that. It's like that to me. I'm like, that's my enemy. Even though if I met that guy or girl, they're probably a lovely person. And I'd probably be like, hey, thank you so much for paving the way and proving that this niche works. That's the reality of it. But in my head, I'm like, this is my art. Like, I'm not going to get into names now, but in the online business space, I have arch nemesis, like people that I'm like, I just want to bury them, even though I have nothing wrong with them personally. But that's what motivates me, is like, I've got to beat that person. That's what motivates me. So,
yeah, I like it. Cool. Yeah. All right. So before we wrap it up, is there anything else like you'd like to chat about or discuss, anything you're getting up to on 1 Hour Professor we should know about?
I mean, not so much. Like with 1 Hour Professor right now, what I will say, so I dove, we didn't touch on it too much, but I dove really heavily into YouTube in 2020. That was my year of YouTube, if you will. From the start of the year to the end of the year, I had committed to doing 3 videos a week, every single week. I made it to the second week in December, and then I had a hiccup and I stopped, I didn't stop completely. I only got down to 2 a week. And I also got burnout. YouTube has been a very interesting experiment that I've had some difficulty with. I've done reasonably well. I think I have like 13,000 subscribers or whatever on my channel, which isn't terrible, but I've just found that to be good but different than Google, right? Like for me, just Google has always been kind of the golden goose. So that's been a very interesting experience as well for those who have tried YouTube. But I would say, like, in general, just talking about things, like if it was any like words of advice for people, I would just say, just have clarity and focus on where you should really go, and try not to do too many things at once. Like, you don't have to, you know, because I see people come into my community and they're like, well, you know, I heard that I have to be on Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest, and then I also have to have a YouTube channel and then a podcast and this. And I'm like, no, like, just stop. Like, what you need to do is get one thing, grow it to where it works, grow it to where it's making money, that one thing. And then kind of like what we just talked about with silos with sites, right? Like, focus on one thing, make it work. And once it's working and maybe you have some staff in place to help you and things are okay, then it's okay to shift. So like, yeah, if I could go back and tell anybody anything, it would probably be focus a little bit more and don't do what I did, which is like everything under the sun and just be all over the place. But Yeah, 1 Hour Professor. I mean, I'm just focused now. I'm focused on blogging. I still do YouTube once a week, but I'm mostly just focused on blogging, like different content. I do eventually, I'm going to be creating informational products and all that. I think after my wife and I have officially moved on and are in a warmer climate, I'm then going to start building out those informational products. So,
in your flip-flops.
Yeah, my flip-flops. It'll be mostly online courses. It's funny because I'm like here and it's cold and the weather isn't great all the time and I complain about it. And I'm like, I want to move to a warmer climate so that I can go and sit inside my office and make online courses. But, you know, end of the day, I think it's a better living arrangement to be somewhere warm than here. So,
yeah, sure. Cool. So for people that want to learn more and want to know more about you and follow you some more, like, where should they go?
Just 1hourprofessor.com, spelled out 1hourprofessor.com. So on Google, obviously, or just, you know, any browser, whatever, you can do that. But also, if you want to check out my YouTube channel, got quite a few videos there. I think a lot of them are helpful. And that's just under 1 Hour Professor as well. So really, just type in 1 Hour Professor somewhere and you'll find me.
Great. Well, I want to say again, thanks so much again for joining us, Ron. I really enjoyed the chat. So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, Mark, it was nice to meet you. I had a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, Please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.